This Dharma Talk is brought to you by the Chicago Zen Meditation Community. Learn about us and our teacher, Miyoshi Thompson, at zenchicago.org.
Welcome, everyone. At one point, this was in China, about the 9th century, Dongshan, who is the founder of our school in China, Soto School of Zen, was asked by his teacher whether he was happy in his practice. And Dongshan said, "It is not without joy. It's like sweeping excrement into a pile and finding a precious jewel hidden within." How offhanded he was, you know, about his enjoyment of Zen practice. But we have to admit, you know, the metaphor is sometimes apt. There's some Zazen periods when we're preoccupied with the difficulties of our lives. And we might indeed feel that we're messing around with a pile of excrement in those periods. But do we also feel the delight of the precious jewel? That's the question I want to take up this evening. The suttas record that Buddha felt pleasure when he finally let go of his ascetic practice and took up the meditation that came to be our practice of Zazen. He felt pleasure, but he was very cautious about it. It actually frightened him to feel pleasure. But he soon realized he had nothing to fear, because this enjoyment that he felt in meditation was very difficult from the compulsive clinging to so-called pleasures of the world, you know, that eventually causes us to suffer. I wonder if any of us would be here if it weren't for the feeling of pleasure and well-being that can be generated in our meditation. When you read the early accounts of the monks' meditations, words like gladness, rapture, joy, and happiness are used to describe the feelings that arise out of practice. And these feelings are seen as the basis for meditative concentration, that without these positive feelings, meditative concentration would not be possible, and therefore tranquility would not be possible, and therefore insight would not be possible. So it was taught that our meditation, our insight into the path, depends on our enjoyment of the path. And it was said that the condition for these pleasurable mental states to emerge was faith. Not faith like in believing something that cannot be shown to you or cannot be demonstrated. Faith, we would say more like taking refuge in the three treasures, taking refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. I suspect that these were the jewels that Dongshan found in his pile of excrement. The sutra says, without this trusting reliance on Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, our meditation would not be possible, and we would not have joy in our practice. I think there's really something to that. When I was practicing as a psychologist, I would often teach people meditation kind of, you know, for stress reduction as a psychological tool. And it's fine for that, but I always felt that I wasn't giving them the whole thing. I felt like I was giving them the leash without the puppy. Because the whole thing is what makes the meditation meaningful, what makes it joyful. It's based on gratitude for the Buddha and trust in the teaching and in communion with the Sangha. That's the basis of meditation. And when we have this base, it's already the meditation of joy. The suttas also say that this trust and joy and concentration and tranquility culminated in insight. My favorite Pali word these days, yata bhuta jnana dasana, which means knowing and clearly seeing all beings just as they are.
Can you use that word?
I will. In fact, I'll even say it the way it would be accented if we were chanting it in Pali. I think it's yata bhuta jnana dasana. Yata bhuta jnana dasana. You have to admit it has a pretty happy rhythm. It's easy to dance to. Maybe even the monks, as they were preserving the teaching by chanting, maybe they tapped their feet just a little when they got to yata bhuta jnana dasana. The ancient monks also felt that joy arose naturally out of spending their time in seclusion, out of letting go of their clinging and their grasping and their craving for material things in the world. And when they did that, this led to their ability to experience the world as it was, without our personal preoccupations. So, a few centuries later, we have the instruction of Dogen, our teacher in Japan in the 13th century, whose simple instruction for Zazen was, cease all involvements and relinquish all affairs. The suttas say that this is what establishes the condition for happiness in our practice and in our meditation. Now, whether we describe our Zazen as rapturous or not, I think we should permit enjoyment to be part of the experience of meditation. This is a very old practice. You remember Dogen called Zazen the Dharma gate of repose and bliss, the practice realization of totally culminated enlightenment. You can't say this without smiling. You can't scowl when you notice the experience of totally culminated enlightenment. So the question we should ask of ourselves is, are we enjoying our zazen? Of course, zazen is a kind of a kaleidoscope of all kinds of experiences, but there's probably joy in there somewhere. Theoretically, in our zazen, no experience is excluded. And yet, there are ways of excluding joy from our meditation. So I want to warn you about them. One way to miss enjoyment in meditation is to get stuck in some criticism of our practice. I should have more concentration by now. My practice is too slack. I'm not having any breakthroughs in my practice. I'd rather be playing volleyball with my friends. There's all kinds of ways that we can criticize our practice that will spoil the enjoyment that would otherwise be there. So if there is no joy in your zazen, check in with yourself. Are you actually here? Are you actually open to all things being just as they are, including you? Is it all right with you that whatever you think the state of your practice is, it's totally fine, just as it is. Yata bhuta jnana dasana means you're fine, just as you are. And it's okay to enjoy this. How many times do we have that experience in our normal life where we're always engaging with something critical or discriminating? Speaking of things that allow joy to come up in our zazen, I wonder if you've noticed that we do everything we can to give each other pleasant surroundings and a joyful experience while we're practicing together. If you don't have joy in your practice, this may not be penetrating into your experience, but the Sangha does so much to maintain this as an agreeable place to practice on Zoom and in person. Your companions on the path have taken on the practice of kindness and friendliness and generosity and are sharing it with you at this very moment. You're getting to hear and practice the Dharma. There has to be some joy that arises out of that. But if your practice seems far from joyful, you probably need more shamatha in your zazen, more settling in your zazen. You probably haven't slowed down enough from the surging currents of your life outside the zendo. And we practice this practice of settling, of shamatha, by focusing our awareness on some non-verbal thing that's not of our deliberate doing. Breathing is one of those things that we can focus on. You may not be aware of this, but some people actually get anxious when they focus on their breathing. It makes them tense. But there's other things to focus on if that's the case. focus on the sounds in the room, focus on some tactile experience you have, having the feeling of your leg against the cushion. Something that you would normally not engage in a lot of criticism about. Something that you could just open up to. If we're practicing mindfulness of breathing, initially this might mean paying very close attention to our breathing. Noting, was this breath longer or was it shorter? Discerning that the air on the in-breath is cooler than the air on the out-breath. Telling the difference between the nostril sensation that comes with breathing in and those that are associated with breathing out. So it's a kind of a very focused concentration on breathing that will lead to shamatha, that will lead to settling in our zazen. It's like with that focus on something physical, the mind isn't as good at telling the stories it normally tells. And if we don't tell the same stories that we always tell, we will always settle down. So this is a very important part of settling the mind. But eventually, we want to move away from the kind of concentration that we have when we're trying to achieve something, when we're trying to accomplish something, that very focused concentration that we can have on the breath. And instead, we pay attention to the breath more by letting our concentration or our attention rest on the breath. This way, we give up the deliberate cultivation of any experience, and we're open to whatever experience each breath brings us. And when we give ourselves over to this kind of awareness, we can really merge with whatever is right here, because we're not doing anything special, we're not doing anything personal. By attending to breathing, by attending to body sensations in posture, the immediate consequence of this is we direct ourselves to here and now more than the there and then where we normally live. The great teacher, Vietnamese teacher Thich Nhat Hanh, always used to encourage us to enjoy our breathing. And he said we should practice breathing and smiling. He called it mouth yoga. And it's interesting when we practice this in zazen, when we smile to ourselves as we're paying attention to our breath. The body somehow responds to this deliberate behavior of smiling. I wish I knew what happens, whether dopamine is released or maybe oxytocin is released. And yet, if you smile while you're in zazen, I think you will notice that some change happens in your inner state, some change that's maybe closer to enjoyment than whatever your inner state was before that. And that breathing and smiling is just about as far as we Zen types go to deliberately cultivating joy in our zazen. But this was not the case in early Buddhism. When you read some of the sutras about mindful breathing, the early monks actively cultivated joy and happiness, and they felt that bliss emerged out of mindfulness, and they actively cultivated it. So just to tell you a bit from the sutra, the monk trains himself, I will breathe in experiencing joy. I will breathe out experiencing joy. And then the next step in this meditation is, I will breathe in experiencing pleasure. I will breathe out experiencing pleasure. You see the deliberate turning towards positive inner states. When we can still the processes that cause our suffering, it's natural for feelings like relief and pleasure and joy to come forward. And from that joy and concentration and tranquility, insight arises, which is like a good thing and a bad thing. Because as insight arises, we see that these pleasures that we might experience in Zazen are not permanent. That they rise and they're sustained and they fall away just like everything else in the cosmos. So here's the real challenge to enjoyment in our meditation. Is it all right that any enjoyable state that arises does not stay, but it inevitably goes? Normally in our lives, this is not all right. In fact, if we start to feel a little less happy, we almost always cast about for what could we do to feel happier. But in our meditation, you know, part of the real value of the meditation is learning to have some equanimity towards the fact that feelings we like arise and they fall away. Our task in that situation is to experience their impermanence and not be disappointed or saddened, or craving more of it. Here is where our wisdom comes to our aid. We see all beings, all inner states, just as they are, temporary, impermanent, no more than the process of arising and falling. And wisdom helps us to affirm this truth without suffering. Helps us to look at the coming and going of our gladness and say, yeah, that's about right.